дорогим сладким. You're listening to Industrial Evolution, where we're exploring how industrial enterprise leaders can use emerging technologies to stay competitive. I'm your host, Chad Perry, CTO, software engineer, and digital strategy expert, and I'm interviewing the most innovative companies in the world to reveal the future of how we make, grow, move, and power things. These are the pioneers who are shaping the future of manufacturing, agriculture, transportation, energy, and every other industrial sector. In each episode, we're looking at key technologies, state of the market, the challenges of adopting technology into an organization, and success stories of early adopters who have been able to revolutionize their business on the back of these innovations. You can find more episodes and guest information on our website, evolution.industrial.fm. Enjoy the show. Today, we're speaking with Laurent Zimmerli, head of product marketing at Auterion out of Zurich, Switzerland. Auterion produces an enterprise drone software platform built specifically for commercial applications like mapping, inspection, public safety, and even cargo delivery, which powers drones from some of the most advanced manufacturers in the world, including General Electric Aviation and the U.S. Department of Defense. And Laurent, with a background in software engineering, is responsible for making sure that drone manufacturers and their end users out in the field understand how to remain competitive as drone capabilities continue to evolve. Those end users may be energy and utility companies, mapping data providers, or really anybody operating in environments that could potentially put humans at risk while keeping eyes and ears on critical infrastructure. So Auterion is the company whose autopilot, mission control, and workflow integration software is enabling this futuristic version of Industry 4.0. And Laurent is here to fill us in on the latest in drone technology, and more importantly, how this technology fits into enterprise workflows out in the field. So Laurent, great to have you with us today.
Thanks, Chad. Thanks for the intro. Great to be on the show.
Now, before we hop onto the nerd train, I'd like to hear a little bit more about your background, because you've come into this position as a marketing leader from an engineering background, which gives you a pretty valuable perspective. So how did you end up going from Java developer to head of marketing for Auterion?
Yeah, that's right. That's been quite a journey. So I'm responsible actually for product marketing, which is all the technical aspects around marketing. And that's really this intersection where I'm most comfortable and where I can bring most of the value because of my technical background, but also because of my career, where I always basically sat on the intersection between technical details and business, or let's say the people aspects. So whenever it came to have this interface between technical and social / human, that's where I feel most comfortable. So I, as you said, I actually started with studying computer science at ETH here in Zurich. I did my master in security and information security. And then I started as a software developer, Java developer, as you mentioned. But I quickly realized that, as I said, that I'm really also strong on the non-technical aspects of the IT side. So I became a technical account manager, which is basically an account manager for the technical persona on the customer side. So I managed accounts on a technical level, and that was in the IT networks and security industry where I was working for over 10 years. I ended up doing this for the key accounts and also led a team of technical account managers. But then at some point, it actually pulled me back more to the technology aspects again. And I switched over to product management and eventually product marketing, which is basically, again, an intersection here between technical details or technical understanding and telling a story and explaining something to a person which does not necessarily understand all the detail. That's exactly where product marketing sits. So I'm very close to product development and product management to understand the product and the technology, and to also understand the roadmap where we're going to. But in my day-to-day work, I'm very close to marketing. So the marketing team, and I'm responsible to basically promote all the technical aspects around the product and to make sure that people understand complex technical details in a way that they can bring it in their business context.
That's such a valuable skill too. That's really something that I think is going to be even more valuable going into the future, sitting between the left brain and the right brain, sitting between the technology and the business, helping businesses derive value. That's really what Industry 4.0 is all about. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the state of the market. Ever since the iPhone came out in 2007, we have seen this explosion in low power, low cost technology. So devices, mobile devices, everything like that, which seems to be a result of smartphones driving the development of inexpensive but extremely powerful sensors and chips. So basically, mobile technology has become commoditized, and now it feels like we're at this inflection point where we can finally do something useful with all of that tech outside of smartphones. So what is it about now and today that is driving the growth in drones? And why not say 10 to 20 years ago?
So I think what you mentioned is spot on. It's this evolution in the around the smartphones, which was a huge booster basically for the drone industry, because suddenly sensors were available at the size and at the price, where it was very easy to use them to do development, to do R&D, and to basically drive the development of drone and autonomous systems forward. And this is exactly what basically was driving the industry, let's say 5 to 10 years from, 5 to 10 years ago. So that was one of the major drivers, which then allowed basically people to start developing products. And today we're already at a state where, as you said, these commoditized components are really built into ready to use products. And I think today it's not about the drone as such anymore, at least not in the commercial and enterprise segment. Drones at first were research objects, and then it was something about enthusiasts who just wanted to have a flying object. But now we're at the point where you can really make use of a drone. So you can get a job done with a drone. And that's what it's all about in the enterprise and commercial context. Because usually it's not about having fun with a flying object. Maybe it is, but it's not the main purpose. It's about getting a job done. And that's really what's driving the industry today. It's about increasing efficiency, saving costs, saving time, increasing safety, all those aspects which are all around in enterprises, and where drones can really add value to workflows and procedures in enterprises.
And to get that job done, though, you have to have something that is useful. So something that comes to mind regarding the technology is you can't, if you just have a drone that lasts 5 minutes and you don't have the battery capacity, just as one example of the technology, you can't get anything useful done with it. So to me, what I've seen is I was doing my aerospace engineering degree back at the University of Texas in 2004, and we had essentially RC hobby airplanes that we were putting rudimentary autopilots on. And it's so funny to look back now, and I didn't stay in that industry. I didn't really stay focused on that, but to see where that's come from. And I know that Autarion started in 2008, just taking a quick look at your history, with autopilot software. So what are some of the technology pieces that have come together to enable an enterprise to use a drone versus this just being something that's interesting to consumers as a hobby?
Yeah, so it really started mainly with the autopilot component that you mentioned. So in 2008, and Autarion as such didn't exist yet there, but all the technology which is the base, or where we build our products on top of, were born in 2008. And that was Lawrence Meyer, one of our co-founders, who created Pixhawk, which was an autonomous drone. So like a flying object that can actually stay in the air without human intervention. And the main work was, of course, around the hardware, the object, but as you said, also around the autopilot software. And from this project, 3 years later in 2011, PX4 was born, which was like version 4 of the Pixhawk flight controller. And this is also the technology that was then made open source very early on, because he also realized at that time that there is much more benefit to drive the innovation around this technology and making it open source, just because it was the right time. There was like a, let's say, a project community fit. So the community was ready for this. They were asking for this. There was a demand on the community side. And very quickly, the community around PX4 grew, and the project was basically doubled or tripled its dimensions in a very short amount of time because it was open source. And it was mainly about PX4, the flight controller. There was also a ground station piece for that. So basically the software that you use to control the airplane, the aircraft, which was also made open source, and which together could be used by hobbyists, by researchers, but was also downloaded by many commercial players. So a lot of the products that we see out there today actually are based on the PX4 technology, which is the open source technology that is also the base of the Otarian software platform on the autopilot side. So actually this open source technology back then already is in commercial use for quite some time, because many companies just made use of it by downloading it and adding their own modifications to it and build it into their own products. But so back to your question. So to get a job done in an enterprise environment, it's, as I said, it's not only about the drone. Of course, the drone is an important aspect. And yes, it needs to have batteries that last for enough time. And yes, it needs to have functionality that it's stable enough. It needs to carry a payload so that it can actually get this job done. But assuming that we have this piece of hardware in place and working, number two, which is very important for enterprises or generally to get a job done, is the payload. So whatever the drone is carrying, which is usually a camera, or can be a sensor or a thermal camera, or any kind of sensor, gas sensor, a laser, whatever needs you need to get that job done. So that payload is not only important that the drone can basically carry the payload, but it also needs to control the payload. So you want to be able to focus your camera, maybe to zoom your camera. You need a certain kind of flexibility to get that job done. And then in the end, it's all about the data that you're capturing. If you're taking pictures, or if you're measuring certain amounts of special gas in the air, or whatever you do with your sensor, it's the data that is of interest for you. So basically, that's the only purpose of putting the drone into the air, is to get a specific kind of data that you then need to get that job done. And so that's then basically the third aspect. So the drone, the payload, and then the data and the integration of the data. So how can you actually use that data? And that's especially important if we talk industry 4.0, if we talk digital twins or everything around that. It's about getting that data into that system that you use to process that data, to create actionable items from that data, and basically to integrate into your workflow. So drone is only valuable if it's a piece of that end-to-end workflow, a piece in that like big picture, because it's not as such, it's not of any use if you cannot put it into that big picture.
It's almost like you're saying the enterprise context is very much outcome driven, and the technology is cool, but being profitable and competitive is a lot cooler.
Yeah, it is.
So you're describing what I call outcomes. And I actually see two types of outcomes for a drone mission. One would be the data that you're describing, data collection. And the other, in some cases, would be mechanical. So that would be something like cargo delivery. Are there other examples or other places outside of data where Otarian is powering more like mechanically oriented missions?
So we do work with a manufacturer that builds a cargo drone for specifically for medical delivery. I guess that's the most tangible, let's say, mechanical use case that Altarian powers as well. The challenge with the cargo drones today really is not the technology. It's the regulations, because it's still hard to actually perform a delivery, because you cannot fly over populated areas, because you're not allowed to fly near airports, because of a number of reasons that regulations tell you when and when not to use a drone. And especially in the cargo use case, it's the most important use cases are even going a step further, and they go beyond visual line of sight. Because usually you don't want to just like fly for a couple of hundred meters and deliver something, but you would actually want to go to longer distances. So you go beyond visual line of sight, and that's also illegal. So today you can get permits for that, but it's cumbersome, it's expensive, and it's just difficult to get them. So the cargo is a very interesting use case. It's also, in times of COVID, of course, a use case that everybody understands the value of. But the technology here is really waiting for the regulations to make that possible.
Yeah, this is such a recurring theme in all of these conversations. Everything you read about just technology in general, as I've seen through my career, is that it really comes down to people problems, right? The technology stays way ahead of how people in general and how society can consume it. And I think this touches on a larger problem that we talked about in our original intro call, and that is that there seems to be this gap between technology and its capabilities and between where the decision makers are that can make use of that technology in a way that derives business value. So where is the market struggling to adopt this technology? Like, do you feel like maybe they are, just to give an example, they are 5 years behind, and in 5 years they'll be using today's technology? Or where do you feel like the market is?
I think it depends a little bit on, I mean, enterprise is such a big word, and there are certain fields in the enterprise markets that today already make heavy use of drones. So in the energy and utility sector, public safety, oil and gas, they are actually making good use of today's technology, except for beyond visual line of sight, as I explained. But yes, there are still, barriers of adoption here, also in these sectors. So usually it's the big companies who already invest in this technology because they can. And because usually in a big organization, you also find somebody who drives this, like a champion who really wants to do it. And that's one of the reasons why you wouldn't do it, because you do not have any knowledge in your company, right? And so you wouldn't know how to start. And it's also still a relatively young technology overall, even though we're talking about, like, say, 10 years. There's so much development being going on in these 10 years, and there's still so much to come that there is no obvious safe bet. Or it's not like when I was working in the network and security industry, enterprise customers would usually say, you will never get fired for buying IBM, right? And there is no such safe bet solution in the drone industry. There is nothing that is just proven to work, and there's no such safe bet. So if you do not have that and you not have the internal knowledge, it's of course harder for you to start. And then, as I said, drones are not replacing a complete workflow. Drones are just a puzzle piece that you replace. So you need to change a lot of things around them. So you need to adapt your processes, you need to train people, etc. So it's change. And change always hurts, especially in enterprise environments, because usually in established enterprise or companies, you have established processes and you know that they work. And if you need to change them, you need to have a good reason for that. And then pilots, very simple. Who is going to fly your drones? Who is going to train them? Where do you get your certificates from? So that's also something that's completely new to most people, because they never had to do with the topics like this. And then usual other enterprise topics like procurement. Where do you buy? What do you buy? And it's such a young industry. how can you make sure that what you buy today is still valuable next year or in 2 years? And as I said, regulations. Can I fly? Am I allowed to fly? I mean, just because you can do it, it doesn't mean that you are allowed to do it. And so I could probably go on with 10 other reasons why not to start with drones. And it's really just about you don't know what you don't know. That's probably the summary of all of that. And I think it comes back to having this champion that really wants to make it happen, that believes in the technology. And then and that's probably the trigger that you need to kick off your enterprise drone program.
So you just described what I think sums up the difference between consumer drone usage and enterprise commercial drone usage, and that is risk. It's easy for an individual to go buy a drone, experiment with it, put a camera, and we could be talking about potentially the same or within the same ballpark of the same technology, right? Maybe the industrial platform will be a little heavy duty or have a bigger sensor package or whatever. But that same individual, you put them in an enterprise context, and there's all this risk that percolates up into the company. So one of the things you mentioned was regulation, right? You can't just buy a drone and go start flying it around your nuclear power plant or around your utilities or, you know, whatever it happens to be, right? I mean, you've got all kinds of risk, not to mention that what if your drone crashes and takes out a power substation or, you know, just something crazy like that.
No, that's definitely one of the big differences. And I think so. And if we look again at those sectors who are already heavily using it, it's often because they can decrease other risks, obviously, and by a big amount. So if you were mentioning substation inspection, for example, but other examples in the energy sector, like power line inspections or flare stack inspections on an oil rig. So these are very dangerous tasks where you put people at risk today using the traditional methods. And if you can have a drone doing these tasks, you can significantly decrease the risks for the humans who did it before. So the new risk that you increase is like much smaller. And so it's much easier to start at a task like this to introduce drone, as opposed to a job where you probably didn't have any big risks before, but just can make it more efficient. But then you have to justify that the new risk is basically worth the efficiency gain that you do. And I think, yeah, so that's definitely one of the big differences to enterprise and commercial use in terms of starting the adoption. But there are also other ones, because assuming that you can get your job done, assuming that you get the right technology and the knowledge and you start doing it, if you are a big corporate, you usually won't work with like a handful of drones, but you have to scale it. And that's also a huge difference to a hobbyist. So even a hobbyist who has like tons of drones, maybe he has 20 or, I don't know, 50 if he's crazy, but like an enterprise will have hundreds of drones if they are really making most of their drone program. So that's another big difference, because you need to think about, okay, where are my assets? Where are my drones? And what about batteries? You need to think about battery management. You need to think about like component management, propellers that you need to replace. You need to know where your pilots fly, when they fly, how often they fly. So you need to stay compliant here. You need to like do simple things like update software on a drone. Sounds very simple. Like my iPhone does it like every other week. But with drones, it turns out to be much more difficult, because they were not designed in the first place to be used at scale. That's really something that just basically now starts to become more important as enterprises start to adopt the technology. So you need to think about, how can I get rid of the SD card that I need to like manually put in and out my drone? And how can I get a wireless data connection and make sure that I can update over the air, but that it's still secure and reliable, and so on and so forth. So all of these aspects are also major differences to using a drone for like recreational or fun purposes.
Yeah, and signs of a maturing technology, but one that is not quite there yet. So this sounds very much like something like a lot of Industry 4.0 technologies where you really want to have a partner or somebody, maybe an internal expert, whatever it is, somebody who has experience with this, who understands all of the various points that you just made, understands the risks, understands where to start. And so speaking of that, I know that Auterion kind of sits in the background in a way as the digital backbone that really makes it possible to derive business value from what we were talking about earlier, which is commodity hardware, which was just kind of a useless piece of machinery that's not doing anything until you command it to do something useful. So how does Auterion fit into the big picture along with drone manufacturers and the end users?
Auterion, as you said in your intro, we are providing a software platform. And the software platform means that there are different components. One important one is the autopilot. So the piece of software that actually makes sure that the vehicle flies. But there is more to that. So there's also a piece of software that you install on the drone, which goes beyond pure flight control, which is usually installed on a, what we call a mission computer. So a more powerful device than the microchip that runs on the vehicle, and that can do more data intense calculations. So you can use that to process data vision, computer vision data, for example, to do obstacle avoidance or collision prevention and more advanced features like this. So that's the part that's powering a drone on the drone. And then I also mentioned the ground control station. So you need a software that basically tells the drone what to do, where you can plan your mission, where you can tell it where to go, when to take a picture, how to fly, when to come back, etc. So basically the controller, the control piece of the drone. And then there's a third component, which is the cloud component, our suite that we deploy in the cloud. And that basically is doing all the fleet management. So more going in the direction of the enterprise functionality that we were talking before. So that you basically have overview of your fleet, of your components, of your users, of your flights. So we basically have all the flights log in the suite. We also, when you use the Auterion software, you can deliver all the flight logs over the air to the cloud in real time or near real time, so that you basically have all the logs in your cloud immediately, so that you always know who flew when and where and how often. So that's really the central piece where we collect all the data. And that's also where we offer the APIs for the integrations to the enterprise side. Because as I said, it doesn't stop here. It only starts here. So basically you have the drone captures the data, and then somehow you have to get this data into the enterprise workflow. And that's basically where our software platform starts. So it's on the drone, it's on the ground, it's in the cloud. Also, when we talk about platform, it also means that it's really a platform for to add additional functionality on top. So you could have, if you are a manufacturer and use our platform, you can actually build more functionality on top, being it on the drone, being it on the ground or in the cloud. So basically use our SDK to build more on top of it that's not possible out of the box. So it's a platform that you can extend. It's also a platform, as we mentioned in the beginning, that's based on open source and open standards, because we really believe that not only on the technical side, but in general, as an industry, you really need to have all the different players to be interoperable and to work together so that we can drive the adoption, not only the adoption, sorry, but the innovation of the whole industry. Because if we look at the market today, if you look at how the market is built or is composed of today, we have a clear dominator on the market, which is DJI, a Chinese company, which is manufacturing great drone products, really. They have a consumer and prosumer and also some enterprise models in their lineup, and they're great products, but it's a very closed system. So they're doing almost everything by themselves. So they're manufacturing the drones, they're programming the hardware, and they're also having their own payloads. So it's really a closed system that's closed as such. And the rest of the market, and that's about, we are talking here about 70% of the market that's covered by DJI. And then the rest of the market is very fragmented. So we have many small players, we have a few medium-sized players that are basically sitting next to DJI. And with Altarian, we are not trying to like compete against DJI. We're really trying to enable the whole industry. Because what we think, and that's coming back to what I said before, it's not just about the drone. It's also about the payload. It's about the apps. It's basically about this whole ecosystem that you need to get the job done. So that's also what I mentioned before, what you mentioned before. It's really, if you're in the enterprise context, there are so many challenges. There's never going to be one product or one company who can solve everything for you. So you really have to choose, what's the right ecosystem that can help me going forward, not just today, but going forward and solve my problems in the future? And that's what we believe in. We believe that we need to have an interoperable ecosystem of manufacturers, of payloads, of app developers that work together and that can basically drive each other and drive each other's innovation forward by building this ecosystem. And this is really also what we are aiming to do, like building the platform that can be used to create this ecosystem.
That's what I love about software, is that it's software is where modularity starts. This is inevitable. Technology, the future of I would argue most or even all of technology is modularity. We see this, we saw this with the internet, we've seen this with web applications, with cloud, with SaaS. Inevitably there are platforms that emerge and then components that can plug in and out of those platforms. And this goes down to the hardware level too. And in fact, we're seeing this in the CPU world as well. I mean, you see something like RISC-V that is an open source instruction set. And I know we're getting kind of off on a super nerd tangent here, but just overall, this idea that there will be there must be modularity, there must be plug and play capabilities, there must be integration capabilities. I think that perfectly summarizes not only where the market is going, but where it has to go to be useful to a large enterprise who has so many different things going on. You won't have a single drone, you'll have a fleet of drones, and they all need to work together under some sort of comprehensive plan. So I'm curious, who is actually making the decisions in these companies to buy drones or to bring them on? Because you've got, you guys are providing the software, you're enabling manufacturers, and sometimes I think you do joint go to market with jointly developed products. So what are you seeing downstream? Who is actually buying this, and what are the questions that they have when they start this process?
On the enterprise side, it's really today it's really still very different, because it depends on the company. It depends on whether it's an environment where drones are already like established. Then it's, I would say, like further up the ladder in where the decisions are being made. But enterprises who start, it's usually in a, let's say, in a project scope, and that project can be like an innovation team, for example. So you can have like a development team who explores emerging technologies, and they would usually be the first ones who buy drones. And then they have like a project scope, and then they can do a proof of concept. And then they basically, sometimes they are like internal service providers to internal customers. And that's basically how it then starts to become a more corporate global program, as opposed to a project where it starts. And from what we see today is that a lot of enterprises are still in this state where we're on a project level. But if you go to, again, big energy companies, for example, who have been using drones for maybe 2, 3, or even 5 years, this is usually somewhere in the operational, like COO organization, let's say, but still driven by emerging technology teams. So they're usually the ones who bring in the new technology, but the teams that are operating them, they are basically already like following their procedures and creating their like standard operation procedures and safety procedures and everything you need. And basically all the end user, and also in the buying process, the people that of course you need to convince as well. So as usual in the B2B selling process, you never talk or sell to a single person. You have your champion, if you have one, and then you have your technical decision maker, and then you have your business decision maker, and then you have the procurement. So there is never like a single unit or person that you would sell to, just like with every other product that you sell into an enterprise.
Yeah. And along those lines, once that decision has been made or there's some momentum behind that, wherever it comes from within the organization, whether it's a champion or whether it's the COO's office, what does it actually take to go from that point to having some kind of drone system up and running, even if that's just a pilot project? But what does it take to actually prove business value?
It's the positive ROI. I mean, usually you define a proof of concept, probably for a single specific task, and then you just do the math. What is the time that you're saving? What's the money that you're saving? And what's the risk? How big is the risk that you're decreasing or introducing? And then compare it to what you have today. So it's as simple as that. It's really just, is there an ROI and how big is it?
Well, you say it's as simple as that, but I'm thinking safety concerns, training, regulatory, even with a proof of concept, you have to address those, or at least you have to scope those things out. How do you scope something like that if you don't really know what it looks like in the end?
So what we've seen is especially with the big companies, that often what you would start with is an external like provider, because then it's easier to calculate this, because basically what you can do, you don't have to think about long-term investments and you don't have to think about training, etc., for example. So you can eliminate this part of the equation for the start, and you just say, okay, I buy my knowledge, everything I don't know and everything I can do from a service provider for a fixed amount of money, and this will replace like hourly work on my, so labor work on my side. It will increase speed maybe, and I mean the drone service provider of course needs to like assess the risks and give you reporting around that. So I think that's probably the easiest way to then have an actual ROI on the table. And so that's what I hear from many of the big companies, that that's how they start. And then it really depends on how much you can do with it and how often you need it, to then decide, do I actually want to bring it in-house and do the complicated math? Or can I actually live with the service from an external party and save all the hassle that I have internally and just buy it as a service?
Is this a long-term solution? And is the market mature enough to support that as a long-term solution?
I think for now and for the near future, it's absolutely a solution. But again, in the end, it depends. It depends if you need to fly the drone on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, if we're talking about 10 drones, if we're talking about 100, if we're talking about a local or a global program. So there is really no right and wrong here. So even if you compare, again, big energy companies or oil and gas companies, if you talk to Shell or to BP or to Exxon, they might have different approaches for different reasons. So some of them might have pure in-house programs because maybe they were starting earlier and they just have the knowledge in their company. Others might have started a little later and wanted to save the hassle and are still going on with drone service providers because there are global drone service providers that can actually bring that service on a global scale. So there is really no black and white picture here, but definitely there is value, big value in services like this today and in the near future.
Yeah, that's such a good point. You can talk to somebody in the same exact industry. You might talk to 10 different people and they're all going to have different ideas about how this can be used within their company, what particular problems can be solved. So even though they might all need to, let's say, inspect a flare stack, there are so many variables that impact that in terms of, I'm not an oil and gas guy, but I can think of like, how many platforms do you have? Like, what are your standard operating procedures? And it just sounds so complicated, but it also sounds like such a relief that you could actually bring in a service provider and just say, okay, just give me a solution to this.
Yeah, and they can. And also many of them actually would help you build your own program. So that's also probably a fact of the industry being rather young. Many of the service providers are not pure service providers, but they would also like help you with consultants, services or trainings, or maybe they would even resell systems to you. So yeah, they usually, I would say, if there is a safe bet on the enterprise side, it's probably start with a service provider, start with a small scope. But then once you realize that actually it brings value, then immediately start to think ahead about these common enterprise challenges like scalability, like cybersecurity, like regulations, etc., before you choose whichever way you think is the best for you.
So let's talk about what this actually looks like in the real world. And I know we've been touching on those points as we go, but there are two things on my mind. The first is that I know you had a recent product launch. And so I want to talk about that and what that means for Autarian's future. But in a broader sense, I'm curious what's on the horizon, what's impossible now or difficult now that we're going to see solved in the next 5 years. So let's first talk about that product release. What happened within the last couple of months? What's going on at Autarian?
What's going on is that we're really starting to establish that ecosystem I was talking about. So that universe of manufacturers, app providers, payload providers that basically work together, interoperate together, build on open standards to really create these ecosystems that end users can get value from. And to do that, on the one side, we partner with drone manufacturers who use our software in their products. And there has been a recent product launch end of September with FreeFly Systems. And they launched their Astro drone, which is a multi-purpose multi-copter. It's really a workhorse drone. It's a rugged, very solid drone that can like work in any conditions. And that can be used for many of those use cases that I touched on before in the energy sector, for example. So inspection flights or also mapping could also be used for first responders. And so FreeFly, they are an established manufacturer in the market for many years already, but they've been famous in the movie industry, especially because they've basically built drones for the movie industry, very successful. Usually big drones who can carry like heavy cameras, heavy payloads. And now with Astro, it's really the first time that they have an enterprise-focused product and also a much more software-defined product. So something which is much more, with much more focus on this end-to-end integration that I was mentioning before. And of course, we're super proud that Autarian is providing the software piece to really make this new FreeFly drone, the Astro, a software-defined drone. And so that's been launched end of September, and it's going to be shipped before. So first units are going to be shipped before the end of the year.
Can you talk a little bit more about what the difference is between a large drone that is intended for a single purpose, like carrying a large Hollywood camera, and something that is more, as you put it, software-defined?
Okay, so basically, if you think of let's call it a movie drone, so a big drone that can like carry any camera, there's some fundamental differences. One is that if you are a videographer with a drone, you usually have two people operating a drone. One is the pilot, so the person who is operating the vehicle, and the other person is the videographer operating the camera. So you would have two people working on the drone at the same time. And it's a very pure manual task because it's about the manual task. It's about the art of getting the right shot, right? That's what's the purpose of that drone. And this is very, let's say, analog, and it's very manual, as I said. When it comes to inspecting a power line or a rooftop, it's not about the art. It's really about the job. So you basically just want to get the right amount of pictures in the right order, and you need to store them or send them to the right place. So that's two fundamentally different things. So one requires, both require solid hardware, but one focuses much on the manual part, and giving operators the freedom to operate it as they wish to. And the other one really needs to be as intuitive and as automated or autonomous as possible, because the operator doesn't care about the drone. The operator cares about the job that needs to get done, the data that needs to get out of that drone. So basically, the operator only wants to push that one button, and then the drone should do everything by itself. So that's the big difference. And that's when I talk about software defined, that's really what I mean on the enterprise side, especially. You really want that drone to be defined by the software that basically can enable the drone to get the job done. It's not the pilot that should enable the software, the drone, but it's the software, because it's a very specific job that you need to get done. It's very specific. It's probably something that you need to get done every week or every other week. So it's a very clear job that needs to get done. So there is no creativity involved, and there shouldn't be.
Yeah, now I see what you mean by software defined, because the ultimate difference that you're talking about is the level of autonomy. And that's something that we actually haven't touched on, is that drones, when we say drones, it could be anything from a self-stabilized platform that a pilot will pilot manually, to a completely autonomous vehicle that can autonomously follow waypoints or even creative pathfinding, I guess I would call it, plus the mission control capabilities, which would also have to respond to that dynamic environment. So that's very heavy on the software, potentially some AI. And actually, the drone market in general, I was referring earlier to my time at university in 2004, when there was this transition going from RC hobby airplanes, off sea hobby helicopters, to drones. And at the time, I was kind of short-sighted about it. I was thinking, well, it seems like that's cool that there's this stabilization. To me, that's what autopilot was. It was an ability for a quadcopter, say, because previous to that, RC helicopters were extremely difficult to pilot. And so I didn't really see it for what it was. But now it makes a lot more sense. That is the commodity side of it. It just makes sense. You have a piece of machinery that can go up in the air, follow a three-dimensional path, and be stable. But the real business value on top of that comes from how much autonomy can you give to that machine? And that's really where it sounds like Autarion excels.
Absolutely. And again, it's also not only about us being building all that functionality. It's again also us providing that platform so that you could have special kind of autonomy features being deployed on the drone, depending on what you want to get done, or for the manufacturers, depending on what they want their products to be used for. So this is really, again, something we think it's not something that we think we or any other single unit could like solve by themselves. That's again where we think the platform comes into play, providing a platform where you can deploy functionality like this easily and extend it and update it and improve it over time.
Yeah, and you're talking about two different positive ROIs for this ecosystem. I mean, obviously you guys are in business, you want to be making money off of this, but you are enabling your manufacturing partners to create new streams of revenue based on new capabilities. And for the end customer, it sounds like most of these applications are cost savings, but however you look at it, you're still impacting the bottom line. So this is what I love about Industry 4.0, is it affects everybody in the value chain.
It absolutely does. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's also one of the big reasons why we believe that the open source aspect is very important to this, because it's not just that it's not a proprietary platform, but it's really a platform where you also have the community that then again can be accelerated by the businesses, which then drives innovation in the community again. So you really have this flywheel of community and business innovation that like accelerates each other.
So on that note, what does the future look like? What do the next 5 years look like? What is difficult or impossible now?
I touched on the beyond visual line of sight before, and that's really one of the big topics today that you hear and read so much about it. And there are many companies that build functionality and capabilities around BVLOS. And we are also partnering with another manufacturer for over a year already that create the cargo drone that I mentioned for medical delivery that did BVLOS tests. And we're all ready for this. And we think that's what comes next. But we also believe that you cannot rely on these things, but you have to live in the present right now and just accept the fact that there is an amount of jobs that you can get done with drones today. Let's focus on them and then let's be ready for whatever comes. And BVLOS is definitely something that needs to come to basically to profit more from the drone technology. And here it comes again to back to the platform and software side of things. We just, with our platform, we want also to enable these kind of capabilities to be enabled or like updated in the future whenever they're ready to be used. So we wouldn't want to have a product that can only do something for today, and then you have to buy a new product next year because now regulations change. So that's also where we think the software-defined aspect is important, so that you can basically update your vehicles and your products with new functionality once they're ready. Just like your Tesla that brings you new functionality to your car whenever you install an update. So yes, I think there are aspects today that are that we need to accept around regulations, beyond visual line of sight, etc., not flying over populated areas. So let's focus on what we can do now, but let's be very prepared for being allowed to fly beyond visual line of sight, being allowed or enabled to fly over populated areas and to basically unfold areas that are not possible today.
Is this something where the market is waiting entirely on regulation to catch up, or is there actually any kind of hardware limitation on loss of line of sight?
So mainly we're waiting for regulations. Of course, we're also waiting for 5G because that's going to enable more or better communication for situations like this. But there have been so many proof of concepts and projects that basically proved that you can safely fly, or that you can, let's say, I don't want to judge the safety here, but that you can that you can fly technically beyond visual line of sight without losing control at any given time. So that's been proven, many times before. So here it's really about regulations, about defining what kind of safety measures needs to be in place, etc., to actually make this a legal operation.
Yeah, that's good news and bad news, right? Because on the one hand, if you're waiting for regulations in the market to catch up, that's something that companies have been dealing with forever, right? But that's the bad news. The good news is that you could potentially have some input on this, right? So if you're in the, say, oil and gas, utilities, electric, whatever industry, and you want to push this further, what are some of the things that are going on to get this market opened up? And what are some of the things that individuals who are interested in this at companies can do to move the dial on this?
And now I guess that's exactly the questions where I cannot give you the right answer. Sorry, Chad. Regulations is really, that's a thin ice for me.
So I want to go back to the product launch, or the, I mean, you guys are always innovating. So What are you doing to open up the ecosystem to push the envelope there?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, it's about all these different aspects of the ecosystem. So not just about the drones. I was talking about Astro, the drone that was released. I was talking about the cargo drone from Avi, a European player that we're working with. There's also Vector and Scorpion. That's a different system that a German manufacturer is bringing to market together with us. So that's really on the vehicle side. So we're already covering different kinds of vehicles here. But there's more to that than that. There's the payloads. I mentioned that before. And with the Astro launch, the drone that we recently launched with FreeFly Systems, we also collaborated with Sony to integrate the Alpha 7R4 camera, as I think 65 megapixel camera, where you can really shoot high definition, very high quality pictures for inspection, for mapping. And we completely integrated the control of this camera into our platform. So every drone manufacturer who is now using the Otarian software platform can use this payload on their drone. And using the payload means not just like carrying it, but actually changing the settings, pulling the trigger at certain times, getting the pictures, adding a geotag to the picture so that you exactly know where it was taken from. So really integrating the payload into the vehicle. So that's another example that really makes this ecosystem become real. And then there's the app side that I mentioned. And we also announced a partnership with Esri. Esri is a leader in GIS software, so geographic information system software that you usually use to capture and also analyze spatial data and geographic data. So they're mainly for us important for the mapping use case, where you have, for example, the Astro drone carrying a Sony camera and then delivering the pictures into the Esri cloud, the SideScan app, the app that they're using to bring drone data into their GIS suite to basically then analyze and use the data. So that's really an example how you then can basically have an end-to-end solution which is really built from that ecosystem that we build around the Otarian software platform.
Yeah, there's so much going on. I mean, just talking about it in terms of apps and plug and play and ecosystem, just as a software engineer, I just have all these questions around, okay, well, like actually, how do you, you know, the first thing that came to mind was a marketplace, right? Because if you're building an integration to a Sony camera, you know, if you have a platform, then you can enable outsiders and especially open source to build these integrations that are off the shelf. And so then you get something like a Zapier or some of these other workflow automation. I think they have robotic process automation is the word I was thinking. But that's what you guys are building.
Absolutely. And that's also why we're building it on open standards and so that we can actually create this environment and build this ecosystem. And yeah, as I said, it's really all around the software. So this is about the software-defined drones and how they basically then fit into this big picture of the ecosystem.
So on that note, we're going to have to wrap up. Is there anything else that you would like to leave our listeners with?
I think we covered it all. So be brave, use drones in your enterprise environment. I think there is much value to it. I understand that there are a lot of risks or barriers that you encounter. But in the end, we've seen so many positive cases and there is going to be so much more in the future. So the earlier you start, the better you're prepared for whatever else will come.
And for manufacturing, potential manufacturing partners or end users who are interested in getting started with this, what is the best way for them to either get in touch with Otarian or get started on this path?
I think for both, it starts with our website. So get in touch on our website, talk to us. You can also, of course, approach me directly and get in a conversation. For manufacturers and developers, there's also resources on our website available. There's, of course, the PX4 community, which is not Otarian, but which is the technology behind the products, where we are contributing a lot to. So if you are an open source developer, this is really the place to go. In general, otarian.com is where you get in touch with Otarian.
Laurent, really enjoyed it. Thank you so much. Really appreciate everything you've had to share with us.
Thanks, Chad. It was a pleasure.